Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. Oh, for probably 3 months now, we have been working with our friend Davide, who is plugged in with the local art community and featuring the artists of the month. They do it on Fox 2. Then they come here and do it on the Dave Glover Show. Good to see you again. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for having us.
Introduce our artist of the month.
All right. We have 18 and counting here from St. Louis and is the May official St. Louis Artist of the Month. Welcome.
Nice to meet you. Yeah. You're a local guy, Southside, right?
Yep. Yep. Still on Southside, from the Southside.
And you went to Chicago Art Institute.
Yep. SAIC was back here in 09, so I was there 05 through 09. Lived in Chicago for a little bit. It was cool.
Tell me about that. Like, just tell me about... Tell me everything. Yeah, like, I mean, go back to childhood, because I'm so fascinated by this.
There's a lot, you know. I mean, I've been, you know, consciously an artist since I was, you know, a first grader. That's how I made my friends, drawing pictures for people. And, you know, I'm still doing that now. I'm involved in a lot of different things, from teaching to painting murals to performing music, DJing around town. I mean, I've been steady for the last 20 years, working with different organizations and people and getting my ideas out and sharing what I know.
How is, so if you think about like medical school and you go in on your first day, you're like, well, I could deliver babies. I could work with people with cancer. I could be a psychiatrist. When you go into art school, is it kind of the same?
I think it's anyone could be an artist, right? But it's who wants to dedicate that time to, who wants to really sit and spend their time around artists and understanding how their creativity applies to the rest of the world. You know, I think it's one of those things where it takes effort to prove your seriousness. You know, if you're a doctor, everyone knows, it's like, all right, that's real, there's lives on the line. Not so much the case with art, but it's still important. So, you know, I think of art school as a place to prove yourself, but then also you're not going to have that potency anywhere else. You know, you'll have one artist on a team of 500 people, right? But if you're surrounded by 500 artists, you're really going to soak in a lot of, you know, a lot of approaches and just kind of get some perspective on who you are and how you compare to everything else.
That's a great point. So Wheels and I both played college sports, and we were really good before that. And when we got to college, we looked around and went, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Was it like that in art school, where you looked around and you're like, everyone here is really good?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I've got a competitive side to me, but that's just, again, because I'm serious about it. It's not a better than... I don't see it that way. Sometimes if people bring that energy, yeah, I'll play ball with that. But otherwise, it's just soaking in the perspectives and seeing what it's all about. So I'm not the type of person that sees myself as not as good as someone. I'm different. What's my angle? Like, what do I actually enjoy versus what they enjoy? And there's room for all of us. You just got to go after it.
Yeah. How would you describe the art in front of us? Is this primarily what you're focusing on now?
You know, I switch gears and sometimes I forget how long I've been working on something, but I've been doing these sort of electronic music instrument illustrations and paintings for the last maybe like 4 years. But it really kind of gelled in this last year, namely after I did Paint Louis and got a lot of feedback on the piece I called Synth City. And it was basically like a collage of St. Louis industrial architecture, modular synthesizers, drum machines, boom boxes, things like that. And, you know, I just make what feels good to me. And if people are reacting to it, I run with it. You know, I love all of what I'm doing, but I pick up on people's energies well. And it's like, it's kind of nice to have, you know, a positive direction or, you know, a challenge, if you want to call it that. But I kind of already knew it was going to be successful based off of the feedback that I've got from the mural I did. So I decided to make a bunch of pieces about it and incorporate more buildings and tell wider stories about the city as a whole.
So you're a St. Louis guy. Talk to me about the city of St. Louis through the eyes of an artist.
It's a playground. You know, this is one of those places where, you know, we ride this fine line of don't let everyone know how cool we are, but we also want people to know that we're cool. We don't want to be overcrowded with people who are here for the wrong reasons or shallow reasons. And the people who create here have room to create. You know, there's frustrations such as like, what's the market, or what are the options? We need more venues, more galleries. Like, I think those things are always going to exist. But just the spirit of how we approach, you know, opportunity is rare. I mean, and this is me talking from other people's perspective.
Yeah,
this
sure.
is me telling the story of people from other cities and what it's like when they visit and then fall in love with St. Louis. So, you know, we've got room to be unique and, you know, there's no pressure to be fake.
So I know you're teaching now and you're working with inmates.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, so Devin Johnson, who brought me in and came up with the idea of being the artist in residence, I had worked with him years before I was officially the artist in residence. By way of, I did one of the artist talks. I went in and did a music performance. And then about a year after that, I came back and did a 4-week watercolor illustration series. And, you know, everything was working really well and positive feedback and it was smooth. I was happy with the interactions and the conversation. So he kind of came up with this idea that of a position that didn't exist. And, you know, he left it really open ended, asked what would I do with what we would call an artist in residence. And we kind of planned on it and thought about it, reflected, you know, secured the grant money for it throughout the year. And I decided I would do what I'm doing here, painting murals. There was a lot of feedback from the guys on the inside, too, even from stories of other other prisons around the country and kind of comparing what other people are doing. And yeah, so it's like, let's do the mural program, paint some of the walls, and then I'll run an open art studio rather than having specific lessons. It's like something a little more open-ended, just a supply or, you know, just a bunch of supplies and whatever ideas are brought to the room and just kind of fielding those and supporting those ideas.
And I'm sure the reaction is different among, you know, all the different people who take part in it, but were you happy with the enthusiasm they brought?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so many different perspectives and so many different skill levels and interests, but it's all genuine reactions and genuine excitement and intrigue of wanting to improve, trying to figure out how materials work and what's the best combination and approach to do those. I mean, that's where my mind is at all day. So it's easy and natural to kind of talk those sort of things. But on a personal level, it's just really awesome to hear how, you know, these new skills and new opportunities relate to their families, their friends, some of these guys have been making art longer than I've been alive, you know, and just kind of hearing their perspective on it now and the ebbs and flows over their lifetime is, I don't know, it's just really inspiring. I just love that type of stuff.
If you guys are just tuning in, our friend Davide is here with us. He's with us every month, brings in the artist of the month. Today is 18 and counting. Rach, question?
Yeah, so as I understand, you do music too. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm a beast out here. I gig a lot. it's nuts, you know. I mean, but 2 weeks ago, I did five gigs, you know, and I'm spinning vinyl. I'm doing hardware synths. Like, you'll never catch me with a laptop on stage. Like, I'm about it. I just like the tactile, real stuff. I'm covering wide range. We're going trip hop, drum and bass, soul, post-punk, funk, dubstep, rap, 80s. Who cares? Like, I put it together. I make it work. And, you know, I like surprising people. I like presenting a wide range of different ideas and cultures and times in one sort of setting. I can do it all. Of course, I've always got my preferences and my strengths and what I specialize in. But I'm spending like every week, or I run a synth meetup that's next week called Modular Mob. It's like, you know, open sign up. It's kind of like an open mic sort of thing, but mm-hmm. it's specific to hardware, electronic music, and, you know, a lot of improvised experimental stuff. And that's been going really well. You know, I'm a couple different DJ residencies that I'm at every month, and then whatever pop-up things show up.
You know, earlier you talked about the St. Louis market from an artist perspective, but when you're out, whether you're playing music or you're sharing your art with people, what's the appetite like from the people who are showing up to consume this kind of stuff? Like, how does St. Louis show out for this type of thing?
They pay attention. You know, there's people who, like, I'm regularly meeting people who are giving me compliments because they've been watching for however many years. And I may not know them or may not have ever spoken to them, but I get into a lot of, first conversations with folks who are really passionate about what I do and what I share. And it's not just me. There's tons of musicians and artists who are passionate about their work. But it's really cool when you hear from someone who doesn't make music or doesn't make art, how much they love it and how it's inspiring for them, or how it helps give them something else to think about, or how it's different from everything else on the internet. Like, when people are really attentive when they're in the room. And you just, I don't know, I've learned a lot this last year to just be really patient with absolute strangers, because you never know what's going to come out of their mouth. And it's been a lot of really encouraging, positive things coming from people. And I have can never predict who or what it's going to be. But I do think people don't need to do that. So if people are going out of their way, it must be really deep for them to express it.
What advice would you give, whether the person out there listening is 19 years old or 69 years old, who have a belly fire for this, but they have no experience at it, and maybe they're a little sheepish about being made fun of? Hey, I'm 69 years old, you're going to start painting, what's wrong with you? Like, give them some advice.
I mean, there's so much room out there. You know, do it. You know, count your experience as relevant, even if it seems like it's completely different from the art that you might make. I think that happens a lot with me, where I'm like, oh, well, you know, the songs that I write of my own don't sound like the songs that I spin, and that doesn't match my illustration style. Who cares? I mean, there's like different angles, and there's going to be different people. There's not, people don't love everything that I play. People don't love everything that I paint, but they might like some other thing that I paint or some other thing that I play. So it's like, you know, like, trust yourself and like really respect your experience and respect whatever calling you have to do things. And the other thing is, like, the quicker you get it out there, the quicker you can get over, you know, how judgment feels to you. Because that's like a kind of a layer that you have to break through, you know, especially if you're applying for things. And like, you know, I tell young people all the time who might want to get involved in something that's maybe way over their head, or at least, you know, in comparison to the experience of other artists who are in the same like competitive pit. Right. It's like, just start that process, start applying for things, get used to being turned down, or get used to answering awkward questions, or get used to having to describe yourself and what you're doing as soon as you can, because that's just a completely different approach. What's in you, what you're thinking about, that's natural. But when you start making it public or asking or, you know, sharing with strangers, that's an awkward stage for everyone. The sooner you can get through it, the better.
How do people find your work?
I'm getting ready to launch a new website. Well, it's the same, 18andcounting.com. It'll be the same URL, but in about a week or so, there's going to be a huge, huge, huge upgrade on that. My buddy Schnalk has been working on it. We've been working on it for like 3 years. So please, please, please check that out later. You can check it out now. My work's on there. There's links to my Instagram. I'm pretty active on there. That's at 18 and counting. But yeah, that website, when it drops, it's you know, it's 20 years of everything I've done in one space without having to scroll through flyers for events. You can filter it by murals. You can filter it by music releases. It really is going to be like the most comprehensive way to see all of the things that I've been up to. And that's going to be really easy. And I've been really anticipating that for a while. But just type in 18 and counting. No spaces. There's plenty of stuff out there.
You know what's so cool is that, so I played music through the 80s and 90s, still do, but like I was a part of the scene, like when the landing was the landing.
Yeah.
And before me, there were guys playing Glenn Miller music, and now there's you.
Yeah.
And someday you'll be my age, there'll be some kid, and you're like, what the hell are you doing? I don't understand.
Yeah. But I'm ready for it.
You know what I mean? It's like the through line of St. Louis.
Yeah.
Of artistic St. Louis, musically, artistically. You go all the way back, and St. Louis has always had great artists.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of what I've been trying to accomplish with this series and with my Modular Mob event. And it's a wide range of ages that's showing up to that. I mean, we've got 19-year-olds who just started making music and just started showing up publicly. And we've got people 50-plus who have been doing electronic music for 30 years and hardly ever leave the house, but they step out to Modular Mob. And when you've got that range of different musical styles, different instruments, different experiences, different parts of the city, it's cool. The conversations that come in those spaces are awesome. It's different from, you know, I think there's power to having like regulars in a spot too. Like that's a different type of community. But when you've got this random variety, but there's this one common thing, and it's electronic music, and it is sharing personal, often improvised decisions and music, it's a little more soulful than I think people tend to think of when it comes to talking about electronic music.
Yeah.
Especially with how it's blown up over the last decade, and you know, people in EDM and dubstep becoming popular terms for people who don't necessarily know the history of those things. I think it's cool for people to see something that's a little more vulnerable and a little more, like, honestly, like skeletal when it comes down to how it's made and produced and created. And I want to put that out there because, you know, we St. Louis gets celebrated for its blues. We get celebrated for our rock and roll, our hip hop. And like we're kind of missing this corner of electronic. And maybe it's because it's new. Maybe it's because we're not Detroit or Chicago. But we do have a scene for that. And I want people to know it.
Yeah. Come back anytime.
Yeah, I'm down.
Congrats, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
How you guys feel about those artist segments, but I love them. I think it's so interesting. Andrew, who is Carl Buschby?
He is the, I think, German guy.
Okay.
Who was in, I believe, Chile in like 1998, drinking at a bar, and he was like, bet his friend at the bar that he could walk home from there to, I think, Germany. And he's been walking basically around the world, or swimming, or otherwise. He doesn't do any kind of transport. He doesn't do any kind of, like, you know, he doesn't take any boats or anything like that. And he's been making his way around the world for, like, 20-something years.
What's his name?
Carl Buschby.
Does he, like, write books, or...?
He's written a couple of books. That's, okay. I think, how he makes it. And then other than that, he, like, just relies on, like, community, you know.
I mean,
song.
That's neat.
No, I saw some people talking about it online the other day because this year later this year, he's supposed to wrap it up. He's made it back to Europe, and so now there's, like, not a lot. He's had lots of visa problems, and I think he's been jailed a couple times for one thing or another in various countries or detained in one way or another.
Gonna happen.
And he's had a hard time, like, making it through certain places for, you know, all the various reasons that it would be that you would be just free walking across the world. But I saw a lot of people pointing out as he starts to, you know, has a pretty straight shot to his destination now that will just take a few more months. It's like, is this a complete waste of your life?
Oh, I don't think so.
To spend like your entire life just like vagrantly drifting across, man, across the world? Or is this like a good, valuable use of 20 years?
Man. It's a...
Because you're not getting him back.
I never heard of this before, and I just pulled up his Wikipedia page. So he's a former British soldier. So he's a paratrooper. So he's got some skills, I guess, to be able to do some of this stuff. But, like, this one paragraph really struck me that he was... When he was in the service, he married a woman in Northern Ireland where he was stationed. That's who he met. They got divorced in 95, and he has a kid. And according to the Wikipedia page, it says, since the beginning of this expedition, he's rarely seen his son, although his son joined him briefly for part of it in 2014. That seems pretty awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like, also, I didn't even know that part of it.
You've got a kid and you're just like, well, I'm going to trek around the world. Sorry, kid.
And I'm over here like, no, it was not a waste. That is the best.
I was thinking this is the coolest story ever. And then I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, that part's not so great.
Total Access 550. First pitch 645. Cardinals Radio. 104.1 FM KMOX.
Welcome back, guys. DG Essen, KMOX. We have our pal Janelle coming up at 3 p.m. Matt Pauly's going to be with us at 4 p.m. Game tomorrow at 12:15, Wheels. That sound right?
Believe so.
Okay. And then we'll be on after that. I'm off from Friday, and I'll be back a week from Friday, heading out west with the girls, and looking forward to that. Can I tell you guys a story apropos of Andrew talking about the guy that has been walking for 25 years? And I apologize if I told you this before on or off the air, but I just think it's fascinating. And the story I'm about to tell you, there are books written about it. There's a movie about it. A movie, I think, is called Deep Water. But back in the 60s, they had a contest to see, and I may get this wrong, but who could circumnavigate the globe alone in a sailboat. I think that was the thing. And there are two, like 30 people took took part, but two of the people were so interesting. One was a guy who had to sail very well, and he got out there, and you have to understand this is like 1963 technology. There's not GPS and all that. So they would call in their locations, you know, with like latitude and longitude and whatnot. And all of a sudden, this guy's winning the race. And, you know, this race is going to take months and months and months. And he becomes like this sensation. And his family's all proud. And people are just like, this is it's unprecedented in the world of sailing. Well, he was faking it. He had gone barely any distance at all. And he was faking it. And he finally got to the point where they're starting to call him out on it. And he just jumped off his boat and died. That crazy?
Yikes.
Another part of it, there is this Frenchman named just a fascinating character. And he was truly winning. And so after months and months and months of this, he is like coming up on the coast of South America or something. And all he has to do is turn left and go back to London. And he's going to win. He loved being out there so much. He kept going the other way, and he went around the world again and didn't win and ended up landing on this island and spending the rest of his life there. And his book's called like The Long Way or The Long Journey or something. I've read it a couple of times, and it's just so fascinating. He was so happy out there by himself. He didn't want to return, and he went around the world again twice. That crazy?
I think that's neat.
I do, too. It's a fascinating story.
TikTok has a lot of stuff on it that poisons your brain, but you also find some really fascinating people. There's one guy that I've been following who's like, he's trying to go from, I think, somewhere around, you know, in America all the way to, like, New Zealand just by, like, without using, like, computers or GPS or anything, just kind of, like, navigating using, like, yeah, the stars, and he's on a little sailboat.
Wow.
And he's been really interesting to watch and follow, and he'll stop places for, you know, months at a time and just kind of hang there, and then when he feels it's time, he will, you know, head out, and he's like, pick people up on the way, drop people off on the way. It's interesting to watch people like that.
Yeah.
How? Where do you get money?
I was just wondering the same thing.
Where do you get money for your boat, for maintenance, for food? Like, or are you just a rich person, then you got money?
It's vague, yes. he does seem to do a lot of his own repairs, and they don't seem to be necessarily like
great.
I probably wouldn't go out on the boat. I maybe wouldn't go out on the boat. But it's and I'm sure he either has some sort of sponsor behind him, or else he's just like a rich guy or something. You know, I don't exactly know where the money comes from.
Every time I hear one of those stories, I'm just like, how do you pay for anything?
There was a girl a couple years ago who set out to be the youngest person, maybe, to do something, cross the Atlantic, circumnavigate, I forget what it was. But she was either 16 years old or 14 years old, and on her own to cross an ocean.
Yes, I remember this story.
Where
were her parents? I mean, I hate being this person.
No,
they were
letting her do
it. Yeah, they were. They're
like, it's her passion.
Have fun, sweetie. Have a good time.
I should also
say, nothing bad happens.
I'm not
on the open ocean when you're 14.
not to defend the boat crazy person, because I think you do have to kind of be a crazy person. He's not like balling out. He's got like a crappy little boat, and he's got like, you know, he's eating like beans and fish that he catches on the boat and stuff. So he's not like, you know,
catches beans.
He catches beans, and he already has the fish, I think. He's like, I did this wrong. The fish are out there. I should have just brought the beans.
Let's do a DJ's happy hour. Who's got something?
I'm sorry. I feel like a curmudgeon because I'm like, where are the parents? But
no, I think it's fair.
A valid question.
I think it's fair.
It is a valid
it's the
question.
Obvious question.
Yes, if you were out on your boat,
look at that. She's doing it. It's like, wait, I mean, should she be doing
if
this?
If a 16-year-old said, "I want to drive from New York to California," I would say the same thing. What are your parents doing?
Yeah, like,
yeah.
Why is this?
How
okay?
do you have the time, the money, the resources, the safety? Like, yeah.
I would hope if this guy out on his sailboat comes across like a 8-year-old in a trawler. He's like, what's going on here?
I'm having an adventure.
Yeah, like, did you escape from pirates? What are you doing?
Speaking of, watch this segue. I was watching the game last night, which means I was watching the Tarps Off boys.
Sure.
And I was noting how many, like, 6 to 8-year-old shirtless boys.
Oh, yeah, they got into it,
yeah.
Dude. They're totally into it. I told you guys this weekend we had a bunch of little brothers out in the stands for our 14U baseball game doing it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They went out to the bleachers in the outfield and they were waving their shirts. There's like two or three of them out there. They love that stuff. Kids love that kind of goofy stuff.
Is this a season-long thing? Will they be Tarps Off 5 years from now?
No, they won't be 5 years from now. It could be.
They did announce that they're making that section of the stadium a designated, quote, high energy section. I saw that from the Cardinals Twitter today.
Hey, seriously, run with it. And if it dies out, it dies out. But right now, it's happening in other places.
Yeah.
I mean, it was happening in Philly last night, I think. It's been happening in all these other places. So
I have heard that it caught fire here, but those boys were not the first boys to do it. I had heard that there were other places around the league that were.
Oh, yeah. There was one in like April or March. They had something similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. But whatever. I mean, that's cool. In fact, it's fine that somebody might have picked it up somewhere else. But when things take off, they take off. Ride it.
It's cool and fine.
Yeah.
I want the girls to come up with something. Like,
I have a great idea.
No. But just like, I feel like it's curmudgeonly.
The audience thought the same thing.
Sorry.
But Go ahead, Rich. The college boys could be like, we're all going to take off our shirts. And the entire nation is like, you guys are too cute. But like, what if it was a bunch of girls doing anything? We'd all be like, do you even know who's on the team? Like, that's usually the way it works out. Like, name 5 Cardinals players right now.
Exactly. This section is going to be designated the section for people who don't even know what baseball is all about.
If you don't know what the balk rule is, you go set up there. What would you like to see him do, Rach?
No, I'm just saying, like, I'm trying to imagine what the movement would be.
Remember, speaking of girls taking their tops off, remember when...
Speaking of...
What was your name, Wheels? Was it Chastain that did that?
Brandi Chastain, yeah.
After
they scored the goal in the celebration.
And that was such a... Like, she had a sports bra on.
Yeah. And people were like, oh my God!
But back then, you're like, who cares?
My God. How times have changed.
Yeah.
Who's Brandi Chastain?
Soccer player.
Yeah, U.S. Okay. women's soccer player from... What was that? Was that about 20 years ago?
I would say like 99-ish.
Yeah, it was during a Women's World Cup. And they won a big match.
Is she? I thought she might have been like the Kissing Bandit or whatever her name was.
No.
Elvira?
This was an elite athlete. Yeah. You're weird.
Oh, my dad loved her.
Who, Morgana?
Yes.
That's who it was, yeah.
Well, my dad loved anyone with big boobs.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, especially if they ran out on a field, he was just all into it. That was a weird time.
It was a very weird time.
I hope I'm not...
And there were multiple kissing bandits, too. I mean, there was Morgana, but there were others that imitated it.
When I was a kid, I only know about my house, but like when my cousins would come over, obviously their dads would come with them, like from Southern Illinois, and there was this exchange that would happen of grocery sacks. And I later learned that it was Playboys and penthouses. And they'd always say something like, I got a delivery for you, Jack. I think you're going to enjoy this one. Ooh. And I'd always look at the moms and they'd always be like, you know, just like making this aggravated, like, well, we can't say anything, but blah, 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 blah. And it was just like a part of life in the 70s.
Interesting.
Just trading them back and forth. Feels a little creepy.
Is that better or worse than Logs in the Woods?
What?
What is that? What does that mean?
Oh, come on. We have talked about it at least 6. Dave's smiling because he knows I have to explain this now, even though we've talked about this on the show 6 dozen times. You had the log in the woods where you'd have the porn hidden, and then the kids would go out and find it.
You know what?
The porn logs.
We didn't. I mean, it wasn't logs, but you would find stashes all over the place.
You would?
We did. There was a state park behind... the neighborhood where my best friend lived, and we would be out there, like, you know, playing baseball, doing whatever, and you would be like walking through the woods.
All right, and guys, you would
find a lockbox just sitting there, and you'd be like, what's in the lockbox? And you open it up, and you're like, well,
A lockbox?
Yeah, like a little
lockbox. That's not a very good lockbox if you're just popping it open.
Code, yeah.
No, it wasn't a code. It was a key thing, but you could pick the locks.
See,
very complicated.
It was like, it wasn't a code, it was a key, but we all had the key.
In South Rock Santa, we had logs, and in Michigan, they had lockboxes.
They had lockboxes with keys.
Yeah. And all the keys weren't there. You had to.
Yeah, I don't remember pouring in once and finding a big stash, and we created a society around it.
Yeah.
We would have meetings.
You worshipped it like a god.
Look, I wish I were making this up.
The magic log where pornography appears.
Daryl Angleton, my cousin, had a big giant boulder in his backyard that was sort of level on the top. And it was like a Greek that we would like, I now call this meeting to order. I'd like to direct everyone to page 76, Candy Loving, the Playboy. And we'd all be like, yes, I'm following.
But that's crazy that was a thing and it was so widespread. We've all understood it and know what it is. Like at a period of time, 50 years ago, people would just keep their stashes in the woods or somewhere in a field or in a garage. Or that's such a weird.
I wonder how many of those stashes were from teenage boys.
Oh, mostly had to be, right?
Or how many was husbands where their wives were
had
like.
Had to believe it was mostly like high school kids would be my guess.
Her name was Candy Lovin?
Candy Loving.
That's funny.
Googler.
My nickname is Lovin' Candy, so I just feel like she and I should meet.
Guys could have gone on tour together.
I feel like who we should meet is all.
And now for something exactly opposite. Here comes Lovin' Candy. Rich, I think I know the story you're talking about, but the board member.
Oh my gosh, this is an absolutely crazy story out of Tennessee. I've actually been avoiding talking about it because I wasn't able to see the video of the incident until recently, and I didn't want to make a judgment.
I know which one you're talking about.
So there was a Tennessee school board member who told a student that she was hot during a live streamed meeting.
Yeah, and she was sitting there.
Yeah. She was sitting next to him, and she was basically giving a take that he agreed with. And when she finished making her comments to the board, he leans over and hugs her from the side and says, "God, you're hot." This was after she had, you know, been questioning people about careers and technical education. And he says he meant, "Oh, you're hot. You're on fire. Those comments were great.
You're on a roll."
Yes, that's what.
Yes, on a roll. The student then later said that everyone on this board is a coward because no one protected me in this moment.
They all laughed.
She described this board member's behavior as sexist and derogatory. And I had really been waiting to see the video, not because I don't believe that this young lady was extremely uncomfortable. That's a slam dunk. I think a lot of young women have been through similar things where it's like, did that grown man really just say that to me? But the fact that he did it so brazenly in front of other people, I'm like, well, maybe he's just older and doesn't realize how that comment comes across. I finally see the video and it doesn't make it any better, even if he didn't mean it in a sexual way.
Well, to me, that explanation is right up there with,
yes.
I'm not Jesus, I'm a doctor.
Right. I did not inhale.
Well, and the other thing is in the past, he had been censured by the board back in 2009 because he entered a high school classroom completely unannounced. And he admitted later that he was using profanity in front of the students, and he made a lewd juvenile gesture of a sexual nature in front of the students. So at this point, it's like a pattern of behavior. I'm not saying he's like a sexual predator, but he's not respecting boundaries between adults and children when it comes to that sort of thing. So now he is actually being charged with assault. He's facing a criminal charge. Because it was just so insanely inappropriate.
Have you seen all the backlash?
No, I have not.
Oh my gosh. There's a whole other half of the country like, what is the world coming to?
You can't call a teenage girl hot.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Dude, it's so easy to not do that.
And I promise you that if it was your daughter, you'd want to punch the guy in the face.
Man, absolutely.
Right? But you wouldn't, if it was any of those people that are defending him, if it was your own child, there's no way you would be like, it's fine. She needs to toughen up. Like, no, you'd be pissed. And you'd be right to be pissed because it's a joke. So you can't be on a school board. This is the school board.
Yeah.
And they say they don't have the ability, the authority to remove anyone from office.
Yeah, because like he was board independently elected.
Right.
But they did formally censure him. They called it grossly inappropriate actions, but they did not remove him from the board, as Wheels just said.
And they didn't do any of those things until she went public and said this was terrible.
Well, I think
they didn't stop him in real time. They didn't say anything in the moment.
I think part of it was when he leans over and hugs her and says, "God, you're hot." She kind of laughs a little bit. That is a completely natural response when you are extremely uncomfortable.
When you're awkward.
And you're just trying to make yourself feel better. In some weird way, you're trying to make the other person feel better. It's like all of this horribleness goes on to the child, and she now has to deal with it. And it's just, it's so wrong. I'm glad something is being done. And hopefully this guy is off the school board immediately now. But it's the whole thing is just very sick and sad that... that he did it in the first place, and then that there's any sort of support for him. Like, why can't everyone just say, yeah, even if you meant it the other way, you can't say that. Don't say that ever again,
and
sir.
Also, don't lean in and hug somebody's teenage daughter. And when you don't know her.
Yeah.
Or don't know them. She clearly did not know this guy. So what are you doing?